Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We are saluting Pavarotti, which we did yesterday. All of the sound breaks today will be Pavarotti's voice. So let's just listen for 30 seconds. Just for a second, please, if you don't mind. Try not to get mad. And that voice has been extinguished. Welcome to the Savage Nation. You know, when a great human being leaves the earth, the world is a worse place. That's all I can tell you. And people in his category come along so seldom that it's worth noting. There are an awful lot of pretenders, especially in the world of art. But let me tell you something. There are certain fields where you just can't fake it. One of them is being a dogfighter in an airplane. You can't fake that one. You can't push people ahead based upon sexual orientation or race or religion. Either you got the guts to be a top dog in a airplane fighting another airplane, or you just wash out. That's all there is to it. There's no faking it. Now, you can fake it in government jobs because there are no standards. You can fake it in sociology, anthropology, various fields you can fake it in. But when it comes to singing, you can't fake it either. And we got a lot of fakers in the field of singing as well, as you well know. But when you listen to the man hit those notes and you realize very few can do so, you realize you're dealing with a superstar. And I guess for the average person listening to the show who doesn't like opera, and that's most of us, in the world of sports, you can't fake it. You put a loser on the field, he's a loser on the field. You put a superstar on a baseball field, and he hits the ball further, he runs faster, he can catch in the most amazing ways. And that, of course, is again a tribute to the super special nature of that athlete. And in the world of the voice and of singing and of touching other humans, and by the way, he's touched probably, I don't know if not tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people around the world over his career. And when his voice has died, a light has gone out in the world. That's the point. So each time we go for a break today on the show during our political discussions, and we have a lot to talk about today, a big portion of the Patriot Act was overturned by a red diaper dopa baby judge appointed by Bill Clinton. Now, I want to know what kind of government we have that permits one rotten, stinking, fetid bum in a black robe who belongs in a prison cell to steal our national security. I want to know why this judge has the power that he has. I want to know what kind of system we have that permits one pockmarked pervert who runs the ACLU to literally put us at risk of another attack by an Islamo-fascist mob. I want to know why we don't have a government that governs instead of corruptly steals the tax treasury, fighting with each other, exposing each other instead of protecting us. I want to know why we don't go and demand that the federal government arrest this judge and arrest the ACLU bum who brought this case. But then again, I'm a dreamer. I'm an idealist. I still dream we have a government. Think of the word government. Government. To govern. To govern for the sake of the people, for the safety of the people. You cannot govern when you have a degenerate ACLU who thinks it is above the law itself, in fact. Topic number two is the poisoning of our children. As you well know, I am capable of prescience from time to time. Not all the time. Nobody can be prescient. Sometimes you can be prescient, and sometimes some of us can be more prescient than others. You know that for 2 weeks now, I've been hammering the issue of ADD, ADHD, and how most of it is invented by the pharmaceutical medical establishment in order to sell drugs and drug our children. Well, I've been psychic, really, in this way. I've been talking about this and writing about it since 1982. And we learned today that certain food additives make children hyperactive. There is no question about it. Now, I knew this all along. My book was published in 1982, Healing Children Naturally. And many of you bought it then, and many of you are buying it now again. I wish there was a way to sell a million of these copies, because as far as I'm concerned, that wouldn't be enough to get the message out to the parents who are poisoning their children to death with additives. As well as these stories. The glue horse versus the debaters last night. That's Fred Thompson. I don't know about you. I'm not excited by Fred Thompson. I can't get excited about Fred Thompson. I don't know why Fred Thompson is running. I don't even know what Fred Thompson's qualifications are to run. I'm sorry. I have no faith in Fred Thompson. To me, he is just a glue horse looking for a little moment of fame here. We have an interview with Duncan Hunter, the wonderful congressman from Southern California, who is as concerned as we are about Mexican trucks rolling across America without any checks whatsoever. We have a set piece on homosexuality in the church. We have a story from England that will make your hair stand up, where the fear of prejudice let a homosexual male couple abuse boys over and over and over again, but the oh-so-politically caponized, see, that's what the piece, word piece, the initials PC stand for. It doesn't mean political correctness on the Savage Nation. It means politically caponized British. See, the British have been politically caponized, and so they let the homosexual couple, these men, abuse boys over and over and did nothing about it for fear of being called homophobic. They let that happen. One day we shall have the guts to stand up to the various and sundry pressure groups in the United States of America. So those are some of the topics that I really want to talk about on the Savage Nation, as well as an entire day devoted through sound to Pavarotti's supernatural voice. And by the way, I will invite you to, let's say you don't care about it, go on to michaelsavage.com. We have one soundbite, the one I've been kind of playing for the last few days. Yesterday I said he's on his deathbed. Didn't take a genius to figure that out. And if you look down on the left side, legendary Italian tenor Luciano Pavarotti dead. You can read about him, teach your children about the greatness of this artist, the real artist, as opposed to the filth that passes for art today, the frauds that get federal grants that belong in mental hospitals. And you can click the picture to hear Pavarotti sing right on michaelsavage.com. And we got it from YouTube, which in most cases I think should have its tubes tied. I have said for a long while now that YouTube should have its tubes tied, but in this case we want to untie YouTube's tubes. All for you and more right here on the one and only Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, Veste la Giuba from Pagliacci. Just, you know, we're throwing him out there, that's all. I'm not trying to be pretentious here. You know, you can easily say, oh, who does he think he is? I know what the liberals say about everything. Everything you do, they try to mock. What do I care what they do? They'll die in their own vomit any day, anyway, one day. What do I care who they are? They're unknown bloggers. Let them die in their own vomit today for all I care. Get off my show. I don't even want you liberals listening. You pollute the airwaves just by listening. Don't listen to my show. Do me a favor. Don't listen. You think I can't hear your mocking little faces and voices? I can hear them. I have supernatural capacity in this business. Why do you think I rose? You think it's by accident? I can literally tell you that there are people out there that no matter what you do, no matter how good it is, they're going to like nick and pick and poke and pack because they're jealous. They're like art critics who can't paint. They're like literary critics who can't write. So now we have radio critics who can't talk. They may as well be mutes or stutterers. So now let's play a little more Pagliacci before I get mad again. How about La Boheme? Let's hear La Boheme 31. Let's hear that is.
Aspetti, signorina.
You're supposed to bring it up to the park where they hear it. That's all. And you can't make people, you know, suffer here. The object is to listen to the notes and ask yourself, could you do that? Do you know anyone who can? The answer is no. The answer is no. Can Britney Spears do it, no matter how high her skirt goes? No. Can Paris Hilton do it, no matter how low her skirt goes? No. Can any of the fake boy men in Hollywood do anything near this? Answer no. Can any of the pseudo actors who pretend to be gladiators do this? Answer no. That's what I'm trying to get across. You understand? Special, special. Be like when a great scientist dies. I'll do a show on him, too. Like when Linus Pauling died, I tried it for a while. No one cared. You know, there's only so much I could... All right, turn it off already. I'll go back to Rammstein. Give them what they want. That's all. I'll give them Rock and Roll Friday. Everyone will be... Vinny will be happy. Eddie will be happy. Johnny will be happy. There's only so much I can do. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this anymore. I don't even know. I feel like I'm talking to myself half the time. I'm starting to get mad now at my audience. I shouldn't do that. That's a terrible thing to do. I don't want to become persona non grata on my own show. You know what I'm saying? You know, I got to be careful. You ever have a teacher who you loved and the teacher really went out of his way to, like, reach you, and then one day the teacher couldn't do it anymore? The teacher started to get frustrated with the students, and maybe became too cranky to teach. I'm starting to feel maybe that's where I'm at. Maybe it's just today. Maybe it's just been a long, hard summer. Maybe it's been a long day's journey into fall. I don't know what it is. But I really don't have the patience for this anymore. I can't spoon-feed America. When we have such sick vermin as the ACLU able to usurp and steal a Patriot Act from me, and I have no government to protect me from scum like that, from street rats like that, from mental cases like that, people who belong in mental hospitals and jails in straitjackets. That's what the ACLU consists of to me. I know what the type they are. I grew up with these sickos. I know who they are. They're insane. They've destroyed their own lives. Now they want to destroy America. You have no idea how sick these people are who run these legal clinics. Every day a legal clinic. Everything's a clinic. It's one sick piece of garbage from Brooklyn after another. They all come tumbling out of Columbia or NYU. They're idiot savants. They're morons in life, but they have one genius. They can memorize law books. And boy, do they get over on America. You think they're not celebrating? What are they celebrating exactly? That now the government can't listen to some Muslims who want to set off a bomb in America? That's to celebrate? You see why I get frustrated? Because there's no point to it all. What's the point? Bush, you think Bush is the great war leader? And he lets our men be persecuted day in, day out, hanging out to dry? Hanging by piano wire in Iraq for doing the job he sent them there to do. That's your idea of a commander-in-chief? He gives you the phony tears on day one, and day two he lets Mexican trucks roll across the border uninspected, and he tells you it's the war on terror. And trust me, I'm going to fight the war on terror. I'll fight it better than anybody. Don't worry. But if they fight it too well, we'll prosecute them. And at the same hand, you can go screw yourself because we're letting the trucks roll from Mexico. That's what you want in this country? It's like a schizophrenic nightmare. The whole thing is like a schizophrenic nightmare to me. And who are the role models in America? Tell me who the role models are. One white trash trailer park slut after another. Where they dig them up from, I don't know. How do they wind up as role models? Who decided to make these low-life white trash chicks our role models? The lowest of the low. No religion, no family, no children, no nothing to look up to. Garbage. In other words, what do you mean by trash? You say trash applied to a particular white. What does it mean? Either by dint of a lack of education or knowledge, they're considered trash. Look it up in the dictionary. White trash actually has a meaning in the dictionary. A person who, by dint of lack of education or understanding, is deemed to be below the norm, okay? That, to me, is what is held up as a role model. I don't understand the country I'm living in anymore. Then I've been trying to warn for 25 years about the bipolar disorder, the fakeness, the fake doctors, the ADHD, how the drug companies are worse than crack dealers. And I wrote the books. Maybe I've done enough already. I don't want to do any more. I don't want to do any. I just don't want to do it. Maybe I just want to walk on a beach with my dog the rest of my life. But then I tried it this morning. It was horrible. It was horrible. I drove out to a place here on the West Coast near San Francisco called Muir Beach. Let me tell you my summary of going to Muir Beach this morning. There's a new book out by far-left progressives who believe in global warming and the evil of the human race, who say that the Earth would be better off if all the humans disappeared. In the case of Muir Beach, I would agree with them. I personally think all the people in Muir Beach should be deported and that the building should be burnt to the ground and believe it should be let to go back to nature. I think it would be a far better place if the lizards and the raccoons took over Muir Beach. That's all. That's the mood I'm in. You don't like it? It's too bad. It's my show. Now, a couple of questions for you. Why did California's attorney general reduce the bail on Mr. Hsu, not the shoe bomber, but the man, the shady, shady, shady man who gave money to Hillary Clinton and the other Democrats who has now fled the country? Why did the California attorney general last week reduce his bail from $2 million to $1 million? That's question one. And why did his lawyer, a well-known favorite amongst far-left groups in America, Brosnahan, who represents Rat Boy amongst other clients, why did he not take the man? Why did he not turn the man's passport over to Homeland Security, the FBI, Justice Department, as he was required to do? And why has there been no punishment today? Why has the lawyer not been indicted? Why has that operative inside the attorney general's office not been investigated by the FBI? I want to know what kind of country I'm living in, where it seems to me that people in power can literally commit felonies and murders and get away with it. And I want to know where this guy is. And I want to know why it's not being covered by the news. But then again, I have more questions than I do answers. You understand that? So that's the beginning of my show. And I can take your calls. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. And I can guarantee you one thing. There's an old left-wing author by the name of Norman Mailer who wrote one good book, The Naked and the Dead, which was an anti-war book, by the way, in 1948. It was a well-written book, but it was an anti-war book. So he became famous because it was an anti-war book that was well-written. Then he wrote, 1969, a book about the anti-Vietnam War March. Again, the fruits and nuts of publishing row loved it because it was anti-American. Since then, he's done nothing. And yet, he gives speeches day and night. I mean, he's like the Mick Jagger of the literary world. He just won't get off the stage.
Savage.
Is a darker place. The world is a darker place. All we have left are the verminous sluts of Sunset Boulevard and the boy men of the movie industry. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. But, you know, news-wise, the big story is the fact that Hillary Clinton's donor, Mr. Hsu, has skipped bail and that his lawyer has not been indicted and that the Attorney General of California has not been investigated, so far as we know, in the sense that they reduced his bail from $2 million to $1 million days before he skipped bail. Something's wrong with this picture. It looks to me like the Democrat Party put their wheels in motion, worked with the Attorney General of the state of California to reduce bail, worked with the Red Diaper Dopa Baby lawyer to not seize his passport and let him flee the country so he wouldn't testify. To me, this is a gigantic conspiracy. If we had a Republican Party, there would be an immediate and speedy investigation. But since we have nothing but the glue horse, I don't expect any such investigation out of the Republicans. The next headline on my website is Red Diaper Dopa Baby ACLU Judge Kills Part of Patriot Act. Who elected this rat? Now, there is a parallel in history to this Red Diaper Dopa Baby ACLU judge and to the head of the ACLU itself. And that would be the character known as Danton, who was one of the progenitors of the terrors of Paris during the French Revolution. Now, Danton, the literature tells us, who was an evil, horrible revolutionary, was injured as a child while sucking on the udder of a cow. And he was at that time, while sucking on the udder of a cow, attacked by an angry bull who ripped open his face with a horn. And the attack by the bull disfigured Danton for life and gave him a certain feature, which is his upper lip twisted in a permanent sneer and his nose smashed against his face. And that, of course, later on terrified his enemies. This is very much like the head of the ACLU's face. But there are other parallels. A few years after the Bulls attack, we read, Danton was knocked over by a herd of pigs and trampled upon. His face was further disfigured. You hear? Before he was 10, smallpox had added its pits and seams to his badly scarred countenance. Now, although the head of the ACLU never had smallpox, he did have a very bad case of acne, and so that applies. We then learn that the extreme ugliness that was the outcome of these accidents lent a certain power to the appearance of Danton, our parallel to the ACLU head, the man. And then he said, my ugliness is my strength. You hear? The stocky boy grew into a bull-necked, barrel-chested man. Every gesture of his enormous hands, of course, this doesn't apply because the head of the ACLU is the opposite of a stocky boy with a barrel chest. But we'll not read on. We will not read on. We'll just tell you that if we had a legitimate government, there would be no ACLU. We'd have a government. Now, I may not like what the Democrats do, but it's an opposition party that's fairly elected. The ACLU is not elected. It is a group of gangsters with law degrees who continue to usurp the law of the land. We cannot have a government where there's an unsung party that nobody elects and a party that nobody has any responsibility for and answers to nobody except the people who put the money in their pockets, who are usually foreigners, who want the freedoms to hurt us, to rob, to steal, to produce pornography, to produce pimping. Who do you think supports the ACLU? And I'm telling you, the only way this country can survive, and the first thing I would do if I were the president, is I would launch an immediate investigation going back 40 years or 50 years of the type that was launched against organized crime. I would seize all their records. If I found so much as a shred of evidence indicating that any money came into their coffers from any Islamo-fascist group or front group or secondary, tertiary, or quaternary such group, I would bust the ACLU under RICO statutes, I'd seize their assets, and I'd put all of them in jail. Then we could save America. We cannot save America when we have two parties that are bad enough, that are as corrupt as they are, but at least we can throw them out every so few years. We have no recourse with the ACLU. They are utter and absolute vermin, and they are the utter threat to the survival of this country. 1-800-449-8255. I'll take your calls on any of these topics if I wish to. If not, I won't. Now I'll take your calls on the Pavarotti issue. Which is the best? We'll take, I need a woman. I need to talk to a woman today on the show. We have one woman, Judy, in Medford, Oregon. Judy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm deeply touched by your tribute to Pavarotti's virtuosity and the beauty and the integrity of the music that he projected. I just look forward now to your commercial so I can hear that bumper music.
Isn't that something? Well, thank you. We're not going to talk a lot about it, but we'll do it a little bit because, again, a great light has gone out on the world, and boy, do we need every light we can get. We're living in such darkness, and if it gets darker, I don't know how we're going to get out of this tunnel. We are really descending into a very, very narrow tunnel now. There are so few lights to lead us through this darkness, I got to tell you. You certainly don't see them in the political world anywhere in the West, do you? Do you see a light in the political world? Tell me who that light is. Do you see a light in the spiritual world? Tell me who that light is. I'm talking about a living person in the spiritual world in any religion who is really leading the way in the way of the greats. Tell me if there is one living today. Is there a great in the world of art leading us? Someone carrying the lamp. Is there someone carrying the lamp in any field that you can think of? I can't think of too many. There are a few. Sacramento, Robert, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah. I have an interesting past in terms of linking you and Pavarotti together because the week of 9/11, I was really concerned about that, going to a concert and seeing him. And it was on the 9/11 was on a Tuesday, and the concert was on a Friday night. And the reason why you're in it is because all the way down to Sacramento's Arco Arena, I was listening to you go on and on about, you were on a roll that night, and you were talking about security and dealing with the ACLU and the terrorists, and I was thinking, art and what you are advocating are inextricably linked, because you can't have art and concerts and beautiful things unless you have some set modicum of security.
Thank you. Correct. What kind of security can we have when the ACLU, run by a pockmarked, disfigured, sexually deviant maniac, goes after the Patriot Act simply to let drug dealers, smugglers, and counterfeiters do their work? Make no mistake about it. The ACLU works for criminal enterprises. They make believe they work for the freedom of the people. They are funded by criminals.
That's right. And you know what?
And I want the government to crack down. I want the government to seize their records. I want a government, a central government, to take control of this country instead of these fringe group left-wing red-diaper-doper babies from Brooklyn, New York, steeped in hate over those oilcloth floors, over those linoleum floors in Brooklyn, told to hate the country, told to hate the flag, told to hate the family, told to hate the church. They were raised on hate. And then they go to law school because they have one brilliance about them. They can memorize laws. And then they stock the courts with vermin like themselves and put on a black robe. And suddenly that black robe has the power that is greater than the president himself. I may not be a big fan of George Bush, but he's the duly elected president. Who is this black robe? Who elected this black robe? Who is he? Do you know who it is, even the name of the judge, the federal judge who gutted the Patriot Act today, yesterday? Do you know who he is? Where he came from and who put him in office? I'll fill you in. You can find it right on my website. Go ahead, go and look. A so-called federal judge tore apart the Patriot Act. And who is the federal judge? And who brought the case? The ACLU brought the case, again, because they're working for the terrorists hand in hand. The judge is Victor Marrero. Who put Victor Marrero on the bench? The stench from the bench is making me clench. It was your good friend, Hillary Clinton, who put him on the bench. You get it? Thanks for the call. WOR in New York, Richard, you are on The Savage Nation.
Michael, you come in loud and clear on the Wonder Bar radio of my 52 Cadillac as I leave carbon tracks going down the highway. And I love it.
Yeah, I was thinking of getting a license plate on my most gross polluting vehicle, a carbon one or high carb.
And I'm a small-town tenor who studied voice with an opera singer years ago when I was a teenager. I've sung La Donna e Mobile in concerts. And my world is dark with the loss of Pavarotti, who is kind of a model for me to practice with. Just, he had a distinctive voice like Richard Tucker, Jan Pierce, John Kipura, the Polish tenor. Or
how would you rank Pavarotti in terms of his voice going back as far as you know? You know, there used to be a restaurant in North Beach, a little nice little cozy little place called the Golden Spike. It was driven out of business by a greedy landlord last year. But they had a jukebox with old Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, and opera in it. And some of the opera pieces they had go back to the 40s in that jukebox. Their father had it as a candy store. Then some greedy landlord forced them out of business and destroyed the neighborhood with some kind of ice cream parlor or whatever, another fake cappuccino store. But the point is, the operas, the pieces I used to play in that jukebox after two or three drinks were amazing, but they were not Pavarotti. There was Mario Lanza, for example. How would you rank Lanza to Pavarotti?
Similar. He had a distinctive voice. Years ago, my daughter took me to a restaurant in Philadelphia that's plastered with pictures of opera singers, and every 20 minutes, waiters and waitresses get up to sing. The waitress asked me if I sang, and I said I've sung in opera choruses when I was in college. And she said, go back in the room and talk to that person back there and find something, and you get up here and sing. And I did.
Well, it takes a lot of guts, Richard, to do that. And I thank you for calling the program. You know, you don't have to have a great voice. There are a lot of people with pretty good voices who can sing and make people happy. For example, and I don't want to go over it, but I have a friend who has a little place in North Beach called Volare, and Giovanni sings in there. He's incredible. He's got a wonder. It's not a great voice, but it's a good voice. So, I was in there last week, and he starts to sing, and sometimes the whole restaurant stops and looks at him. Song is essential in life, and I said this to you once before in the show. You know, my father used to sing in the house. Men sang in his generation. Do you know that? Men don't sing anymore. Why have men stopped singing? And I don't mean in a jokey way. What happened that men have lost their masculinity? It's very masculine to sing. And my Father's Day, he would sing in the house. My sister would play the piano, and he would sing over the piano popular tunes. A man who never went to college, probably didn't finish high school, so far as I know, an immigrant who had a tough, very tough life, who didn't finish school, but he was very intelligent. He had phenomenal brains. And the point I'm making is that he sang. How was it that men sang in those days? I did this once before, and people called and said their father sang too. It was amazing to me. And there is a difference, by the way, between the – there's a caller from Portland, Maine, who says that Pavarotti was confident, not arrogant. And you know that's exactly why he was loved. There is such a difference between a man who is confident and not arrogant. And I'll give you the opposite example. There is a character from England who slept in the Lincoln bedroom with his boyfriend even while George Bush was president. Remember George Bush had him, Elton John? Even George Bush polluted the Lincoln bedroom by turning it over to that fetid character, Elton John. Elton John is not particularly talented. He's okay. He's got a modicum of talent. He's not even as good as Liberace. But Elton John is arrogant, not confident. There's a big difference. Do you understand that? You get what I'm saying? Arrogance, confidence, as opposed to arrogance. They usually are not found together. It's a very interesting differential, and thank you, Patrick, from Portland, Maine, for pointing that out. This is the Savage Nation, and to me, look, these are very important points and stories, but I really don't want you to lose one major story for me. There's really one real big one, and I almost fell off the chair last night at 10 o'clock, and it's on my site, yes. Dr. Savage warned you about this 25 years ago. Food additives may cause hyperactivity. Did I discover that? No. Benjamin Feingold popularized that, and many a whole generation of parents knew about this. And, of course, that was pushed out of the way by the powerful food and drug industry, along with their pediatrician quack friends. And now you see mothers poisoning their children with artificial colors, artificial flavors, giving them sugar in the morning and then giving them a little Ritalin pill to send them off to school. And they wonder why the child winds up sick and incapable of working and focusing and being normal. I've been screaming about this for years, trying to wake the world up. And in some cases, yes, but by and large, this information is gone. Again, I will implore you to look at Healing Children Naturally and judge for yourself. For God's sakes, your child's future is at stake. I'll be right back.
Savage.
To the politics of the day, a judge appointed by Bill Clinton in 1999 named Judge Marrero, went to NYU, by the way, has ruled against the people of the United States of America while attempting to say that he's actually granting us more freedom. He's actually opening us up to another attack. Now, what exactly did he make unconstitutional, this red diaper dopa baby judge appointed by the Clintons in 1999? The law permits Congress to force through the Justice Department companies such as internet providers and telephone companies to turn the records over to the government of various individuals without notifying them. And so the red diaper dopa babies who often get drug dealers off or killers off or such argue that this is giving the government sweeping authority to control speech. It's the old unreasonable search and seizure. In other words, you find 50 pounds of cocaine in a drug dealer's trunk, but the cop didn't have the exact right search warrant, and so these red diaper dopa baby judges and lawyers have the case thrown out saying, it doesn't matter whether you found the cocaine, you didn't have the right procedure for getting the cocaine. So now the government comes up with the Patriot Act, which they've rarely used, by the way, and the entire left wing goes into overdrive because they commit such crimes. They're afraid of being found out, whether it be child rape, child pornography, drug usage, drug dealing, you name it. And the left wing is involved in it. And they say, well, you can't look into our phone records without notifying us. And I say, what kind of government is this that permits one red diaper dopa baby judge to act as the head of Homeland Security? Nobody elected him. Neil is in Naples, Florida. He disagrees with me. He has 1 minute to explain why. Go ahead, Neil.
I believe that it's a very slippery slope when we decide to start taking people's records, medical records, phone records, different things that the Patriot Act, I haven't read it completely, as well as probably every senator that voted for it. I believe it's a very slippery slope. When you get onto that, you start losing constitutional rights.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. But the problem is, how do we protect ourselves against those who would harm us while using our Constitution to kill us? That's the balancing act that the government has been going through since 9/11. But ask yourself this, Neil. I understand your concerns and your fears. I have no faith in government any more than you do. But once a customer is notified that their records have been turned over to the authorities, whether they that be the phone company says, well, look, we just got called from the Justice Department, Mr. Smith. We have to turn your phone records over. If that person is in fact doing harm or was doing harm or intended to do harm, they will either leave the country or change their behavior. They can claim it was purely accidental, or they can pin the blame on another person and get away with virtual murder and terrorism, Neil. What tools would you give the government to do the job necessary to do to break up these Islamo-fascist cells? What tool can they use other than this?
You got me there.
Well, there you go. That's how the ACLU takes good men like you, who are libertarian at the core, who distrust government for good reason, and they have you believe that they're actually granting you more freedom and more personal security when, in fact, they're putting us at greater risk. And believe me, they're not doing this because they care one whit. The ACLU doesn't care one whit about the freedoms of the people. They want the perverts who put them in office to be able to continue to download child pornography or seduce children in libraries through the internet, or to do the other things that we know the left wing is specializing in. Do you know how many ACLU heads have been arrested over the last year with child pornography charges? At least five. They're all sick.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, we are discussing darkness and light. Let's hear the rest of that aria for the minute. Darkness and light. Light and darkness. Isn't that what it's all about when you think about it? The liberals claim that they are liberating and they want to bring us into the light, and that we on the conservative right are the dark forces who continuously bring about darkness. And yet I argue continuously on the show that the exact reverse is true, that it is the liberals who are bringing us into a world increasingly dark, the darkness of pornography, the darkness of despair, the darkness of drugs, the darkness of rampant crime, the darkness of criminal homelessness. You name the societal problem, and I will tell you that that darkness, that blight upon our social fabric, is the result of liberalism. And of course, when I play the music of Pavarotti, because he passed away yesterday, I'm trying to show you that there was a great voice of light, and that when a light goes out, it is a darker world. It is a darker world. But other lights have gone out on this planet. And one of the lights that went out was one of the lights of legal freedom that permitted this government that we all have problems with to do in its own inefficient way the best it can do, given all of the situations that they have to live with, the investigations necessary to stop the Islamofascists from setting off another firecracker in one of our cities. And that was called the Patriot Act. Now, you know that the dark left has been arguing for years that our constitutional rights have been robbed from us by the Patriot Act. I don't know anybody, by the way, who has lost any freedom as a result of the Patriot Act. Now, perhaps they do. In fact, I am sure that the illiberal left, the forces of darkness, continuously hear from their friends about the government having found out that they were, in fact, doing some evil or some wrong as a result of investigations of the Patriot Act, which is why they want to overturn it. They are constantly involved in illicit and illegal activities, which is why they are obsessed with unlimited freedom, which ultimately is anarchy. We cannot have anarchy in a world of this kind. We must have the rule of law. And so the reasonable law called a reasonable law was passed called the Patriot Act, which was fundamentally gutted yesterday by a judge named Victor Marrero, appointed in 1999 by you-know-who, Hillary and Bill Clinton. The liberals are arguing that this is good for us. Now, what actually did they do? What part of the Patriot Act was gutted yesterday? National security letters, or NSLs, were tools used by the FBI to compel businesses to turn over customer information without a judge's order or grand jury subpoena. And examples of such businesses required to do so included internet service providers, telephone companies, and public libraries. I don't know about you, but I don't know one person who's lost an ounce of freedom as a result of an investigation by the federal government if they were doing nothing wrong. That's the whole point I'm making. Now, why the ACLU is paranoid about this particular law is obvious to me. They are involved continuously in using the phone and using the internet for nefarious purposes. And yet they will tell us that we need freedom and we need protection from an overzealous and overreaching government, which we all understand. But how in the world can we find the Islamofascists who would be, let's say, buying chemicals and then signaling each other via the internet or the telephone that 1,500 pounds of this would be delivered to that place, or that somebody in Algeria is coming over on Monday on this plane or that, and the federal government picks that up and then investigates it. Now, if you then signal to the person that their telephone records have been pulled by the FBI, or their internet communications are being looked at by the federal government, they're either going to flee the country, change their behavior, or pin their blame on another person. So therefore, they have gutted the Patriot Act. Now, this was not the government doing it. It was not Congress in its inefficient, clumsy manner arguing about it and coming to some conclusion or other. It was one red diaper doper baby judge answering to his masters at the ACLU who put him in office. That's my opinion. The world has now become a more dangerous place. Jonathan Okola of Florida disagrees with me. He has the floor. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, I heard you say on the program today that you believe the federal government should get involved with the ACLU and dive into their private records. That's modern
communism. No. You missed your wires are crossed. You got it all backwards. Do you understand what is involved here? Did you listen to what I said, what the ACLU did to the Patriot Act? And what the government was permitted to do? You understand that, yes or no?
What's that?
Goodbye. Have a nice day. I don't have the time to explain this to somebody who doesn't listen to a word. Don't make me explain myself twice. I don't have that kind of patience, frankly. Las Vegas, Nevada. Alan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, after 9/11, the first thing I thought of was who was going to side with him as far as whose fault it was that 9/11 actually took place. And now, with this stripping down of the Patriot Act, it just seems like it's getting more and more like we're losing our defenses, we're dropping our defenses, and we're just priming ourselves for another attack.
We are turning the clock back to August 2001. The verminous, psychotic, illegitimate left is gutting every piece of legislation that was passed to protect us. I do not. Do you know any individuals who've lost any freedom as a result of the Patriot Act? Do you personally know of anyone?
I was in the mortgage business, Michael, and it was a matter of just filling out a couple other pieces of paper, asking for a couple of different pieces of ID that maybe added 10 minutes to the whole process. that's the extent that I have.
In other words, who might have been laundering money to buy a house to be used as a safe house for Ahmed and Mohammed from Denmark, for example? Let's lay it on the line. You're a mortgage broker. Suddenly, they want to know who's buying this house in your neighborhood and who are the buyers, right? What's wrong with that? Why shouldn't they know?
Absolutely nothing. And then once I explained to people what that was trying, what we were trying to avoid by doing that, they were more than willing to provide me anything I needed.
All right. And so now the ACLU, through this red diaper dopa baby lawyer, judge rather, appointed by Bill Clinton in 1999, says that the law violates free speech because there's no court order required for this search. Of course, there should be no court order. What does a court order mean? A court order would immediately tell the person that they're being investigated. They'd immediately either leave the country, change their behavior, pin the blame on somebody else, or get out of the business of being a terrorist for that moment. And they would never be caught. That's the whole point of the Patriot Act, is to catch them before they kill us again.
And that's what's getting lost, unfortunately.
All right, well, you see it exactly as it is. There's only one way to solve this, which is to find one U.S. attorney with the guts to bust a local ACLU cell under RICO acts, and if you go after them on the child pornography, that's fine by me. You've done it 3 to 5 times last year, and by the way, you've done a good job. There are now 5 ACLU heads from America rotting in jail, as they should rot in hell, by the way, for being involved in molesting children or downloading child pornography to an extent that it became criminal. And, of course, that's why they believe in this First Amendment to the extent they believe in it. By the way, there's no absolutes either in science, in government, in politics, or in art. There are no absolutes anywhere you turn. And yet the ACLU continues to want to create an absolute freedom. There is no such thing. The ACLU hates America. Remember, they were founded by a diehard communist. Their goal is to destroy the church and the family and the nation. They must be stopped before they kill us all. Well, that's the point. And we have many callers on this issue. Let's go to various and sundry callers, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back to these and other stories. I haven't even gotten to the other stories, but fundamentally they're all up there on michaelsavage.com. And don't lose the one on the food additives that are making children hyperactive. Dr. Ben Feingold published on this in the 70s. I published that book in 1982, which popularized it even further. And now I've republished it for you in Healing Children Naturally. Please don't laugh it off. It could save you and your children a lifetime of agony. KNEW, San Francisco. Rob, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, you know, they say that darkness is nothing more than the deprivation of light. And I thank you, sir, for shining the light into the corners and the cracks. My question for you is a bit of a religious one, I suppose. I've heard you quote the Bible and be astounded by some of the passages that you read. I've heard you mention power is not a means but an end. And my question, I suppose, is, you know, how long has that end been attained? Do you believe that there are perhaps evil men in power that are out to do nothing more than to spread perversion and essentially combat good?
Well, let's go back in history. Can you give me 4 examples of men who were pure evil who did nothing but harm to the world? I can name 4. Stalin, Hitler, Mao Zedong, and Pol Pot. Okay, all of the last century. All of them, by the way, were, with the exception of Hitler, were Marxists. They were communists. Stalin, Pol Pot, Hitler was, of course, not a Marxist, but he wasn't much different than a Marxist. He was a National Socialist. You could even argue that he really was a Marxist. Although he said he was fighting communism, his government was not much different than the communists he was fighting. He was a socialist who nationalized various industries. But really, how did he differ from Stalin? I don't really see much of a difference. Hitler had death camps. Stalin had death camps. And yet we hear about the evils of Hitler and never the evils of Stalin. Pol Pot in Cambodia was pure evil. He was a little professor who went to Paris to study Marxism. He came back and he killed over 2 million fellow Cambodians. So there are people who exist who are pure evil. In every generation, there are men and women who are born who are absolutely evil. Now, let's come to contemporary times. Why should we assume that we don't have the equivalent of pure evil in our political system today or in our structure today? Would you agree that there must be by – by statistical reasons alone, there would have to be purely evil men in government. Yes or no?
Absolutely yes. And not to mention the fact that the deprivation of humanity in the last 20 years is overwhelming.
Yes, we know that there are purely evil men in the media. We know that there are power mad men who never put the public good above their personal profit or their personal power. They will take the lowest common denominator and lower it bar by bar, day by day, until it's below that of a sewer. And they then control all of the avenues of entertainment and news. Every movie, every book, every magazine that you read goes through the sewer pipe that they own. And this sewer pipe pumps the effluent into every home in the United States of America. You can't tell me that they're doing it for the public good. They're doing it for their own personal gain, their own personal profit or power. Wouldn't you say that that's evil?
I would say that that's evil, especially when they have no more money to be gained to purchase anything. When you have all the money in the world, what more can you buy?
They don't want to buy anything. Men who own all of these media outlets don't need to buy anything. They want more and more power. They are, in essence, governments unto themselves, and they are just as dangerous and just as evil as any government can possibly become, unless they are controlled by the government itself. I would much rather have a government as inefficient as ours may be, as corrupt as it appears to be, but it is still, in a modicum, answerable to the people. While the media barons are answerable to nobody, the judges answer to nobody, and yet they are, in essence, controlling the outcome of our day-to-day lives. So, yes, darkness is trickling down. You go back in history. Let's look at ancient Rome quickly. Thumbnail sketch. There were moderately decent Caesars or dictators, and there were purely evil dictators, correct? And I have said before that a single man can destroy almost the entire world, just as a single man can possibly save most of the entire world. You look at the great figures in religion who came along, such as Jesus. They have given such greatness to the world. Now look at the evil that single men have done, and I've given them Hitler in the major note, Stalin, Pol Pot, and others. But in our time, we've had purely evil men. Bill Clinton was an evil man, a genuinely evil Caesar, who has so masqueraded as good that he has bamboozled most of the liberal establishment in thinking that he did good, more good than harm. And yet he did phenomenal evil to this world in the estimation of tens of millions of people who know what damage he and his wife did. I'll be right back. Savage. So people are wondering where the darkness comes from. Osama bin Laden is darkness, pure, unadulterated evil. Now, to liberals, he's sort of a more nuanced figure than that. They kind of see it, you know. The people who have destroyed the Catholic Church as well as they can, who hate religion, are suddenly sensitive to Islam. Have you noticed how many positive articles have been written in the L.A. Times last week? They showed a journey to Egypt where an African-American discovers Islam. It's just wonderful how they can have such sympathy for a religion all of a sudden. But we were talking about pure evil. So we mentioned Stalin, Hitler, Pol Pot. But let's not forget Mao Zedong, the Chinese communist leader who killed an estimated 20 to 72 million of his own people, either directly through torture and murder. Or by starvation, in stealing the food from the peasants and bringing it into the cities, mainly stealing grain. Mao Zedong, the communist Chinese leader, killed between 20 and 72 million people, directly or indirectly. There's another example of absolute and pure evil. So you talk about great evil. There's great evil on earth. Then there's evil in the minor scale. Red diaper, dopa baby lawyers, the ACLU leadership. These are little dark figures that can lead to the big dark figures, unless they are stopped. Remember, even dwarves started small. And while we right now have dwarves and mutants in the courts functioning as they do and killing the Patriot Act, eventually these little cancers can grow into very, very big cancers. We have a gigantic interview coming up the minute we return on the Savage. We'll be right back. Here's a special report from the man you've all come to ask me for, and that's syndicated columnist Selwyn Duke.
Michael, recently a controversy arose involving an institution called High Point Church in Arlington, Texas. What happened was that church officials had offered to host a funeral for a homosexual man named Cecil Sinclair, even going so far as to agree to feed 100 guests and create an elaborate photo presentation about the man's life. But there was a problem. The family neglected to inform the church that Mr. Sinclair's homosexuality would be featured prominently, with pictures containing obvious homosexual content on display. So, understandably, the church would not be party to the exhibition of sin, and its offer was rescinded. Well, the family's mad, some of the media's mad, and I'm mad too, actually. What irks me, though, is an invidious double standard, Michael. Homosexuals and their sympathizers often expect a special dispensation from rules that apply to everyone else, while Christians are expected to dispense with their rules.
You got to be kidding me.
Michael, I'll first echo a point church officials made, only my example will be different. It's understandable that Christians may offer their services to known homosexuals, as we're all sinners. However, most of us sinners don't expect our characteristic sins to characterize a church service held on our behalf. Look, if a man had been a habitual philanderer, like Ted Kennedy, let's say, would we expect that a church shouldn't have a problem displaying sexually suggestive photographs of him with gaggles of gals? It's absurd. If this would be readily understood if the individual in question were a fornicator, why not when he's a homosexual? I ask you, do they want to be treated like everyone else, or don't they?
Right, exactly.
You know, Michael, this much reminds me of the case of Reverend Eugene Robinson, the cleric who declared his homosexuality and was then elected bishop by some Episcopagans. It was such a grand victory for inclusiveness, wasn't it? Such a bold show of tolerance, allowing the brave new worlders to puff up their chests and boldly go where no half-man had gone before. What was seldom pointed out, though, was that Reverend Robinson had left his wife and children upon receiving his netherworld epiphany. Now, if a normal man had done so to be with another woman, would he be exalted and elected bishop? I don't think so, no. The attitude would be very different, Michael. He just might be labeled unfaithful and irresponsible, if not a pig. Reverend Robinson, though, well, was brave. I guess being a homosexual means never having to say you're sorry. Getting back to the church, the one that can still be called Christian, that is, it's time for some perspective. Let's say, Michael, that a mosque had agreed to host a service for a family, but balked after learning that the party would insist on including roast pork and bacon in its food selection. Now, in our politically correct climate, I can't imagine too many journalistic Jacobins placing the onus on the Muslims. Let's face it, multicultural imperatives would hold sway, and the posers would disgorge platitudes about respecting differences and Islamic sensitivities. For that matter, would anyone find it anything but laughable if someone expected Muslims to brook homosexual displays? Okay, well, then why are the religious convictions of Christians not similarly respected? Then you'll have to forgive my lack of benevolence toward the bereaved, but just how dull are these people? Even if you're a confirmed secularist, shouldn't you at least suspect that a Christian church just might have a problem with overt displays of homosexuality? I mean, what are we to think of their failure to mention such a thing? After all, I can't imagine there would be any expectation that Muslims should make a concession simply because you pleaded ignorance about their prohibition against pork. On the contrary, I think you'd be told to expand your cultural horizons. So, think about it. Who, if anyone, should be offended? Michael, a teacher is thought insensitive and offensive if he brings a crucifix and Bible into a public school and relates a religious message, although homosexual content seems to be just fine. After all, it is said, some of the students may be of another faith and may take offense. Well, what are we to say about the act of bringing images into a church that will likely evoke the same reaction? But, you know, I suspect that a sort of cultural ignorance is the issue, along with a certain kind of narrow-mindedness. You see, many people are so awash in relativism nowadays that they just can't imagine anyone who embraces authentic Christian doctrine. That is, not anyone with whom they could possibly consort. Why, those snake handlers may exist in some backwoods region of stills, spells, unkempt hair, rotting teeth, and home birthing. But the evolved people modernists such as themselves encounter would never subscribe to antiquated notions like sin or truth. Of course they'd espouse the tenets of the times, doesn't everybody?
Are they kidding?
It's funny, though, Michael. Our askew conception of rights and responsibilities. I can hear it now. Oh, those intolerant Christians, always imposing their values on others. So, before this refrain is regurgitated once more, let me say something. If the Christians entered the family's house or business and insisted that photographs with homosexual content be taken down, they might be guilty of imposition of values. In this case, though, think about it. Who is invading what with whose values? The issue here is what political correctness dictates is the greatest value, broad-mindedness. Many people treat prejudice as if it's the first and last deadly sin. And through their criticism of their age's unpalatable variety of it, they convince themselves of their sanctified state. Prejudices, though, Michael, are funny things. They're a reflection of the bearer's deepest, most ingrained feelings, and often are noticed by him no more than a blind man sees his own blemishes. And the prejudices that will truly influence you are seldom those everyone warns of, but those constituting dark shades that remain unseen by a colorblind world that's afraid of the light. Listen, there's one prejudice nowadays that characterizes those on the left, and it involves a certain assumption. It's the idea that anything they choose to remove from the closet must be accepted by all, and no objection to the placement of the junk is to be respected. In their philosophical chauvinism, though, a very important principle eludes them, and here it is. You have a legal right to empty out your closet as much as you want. This right ends, though, where someone else's property line begins.
Okay, Selwyn Duke, thanks very much.
Michael, thank you for having me on the show, and God bless you and your audience.
Savage.
A light has gone out in the world. The name is Pavarotti, and the world is a darker place. I mean, you're going to say, well, why are you beating a dead horse? Hey, he's not a horse, and I'm not beating it. I mean, I'm just playing his music, that's all. So we're talking about many topics on the show today, and I haven't even gotten to all of them, but some of them. You can only do so much in 3 hours. After all, 3 hours is an eternity on the radio, and 3 hours is a spit in the bucket, so to speak, when you really think about the problems that we're facing in this country and the enemies within. The phone number here, as usual, is the same. It's 1-800-449-8255. I'm Michael Savage, your radio commentator. An audience of about 8 to 10 million, they say. I'm sure it's closer to 20 million a week. Heard in over 370 stations. I have a small website called michaelsavage.com where I put up the topics we talk about and some that I don't get to. And, you know, to me, it's an interesting website because I get to say what I want to say and put the headlines up that I want. I love the internet for that reason. There are other stories. I've been talking about why the ACLU is the enemy of our freedom and the greatest threat that we face in the future of America. They stand for darkness. They pose. See, a retrovirus poses as a healthy cell and invades the body's defense systems by doing so. I don't think you understand how AIDS operates. The HIV virus is one of the cleverest viruses to have evolved. It poses as a defense cell and so gains entry into the defense system of the body. Once it is in there, it invades and replicates. That's what the ACLU is. It is a virus. And this virus has replicated itself through the law schools and through the courts. And today, one of its viral entities, a judge appointed by Bill Clinton, has gutted one of the chief means we have of uncovering a plot to harm us. That's the short and the long of the story. I understand this very, very well. Now, don't assume that I, Michael Savage, have any great faith in a government entity and that I want to turn more power over to the government. I do not. But when it comes to a showdown between the Homeland Security Department and the pockmarked pervert who runs the ACLU and his minions, I will take the Homeland Security Department for one simple reason. There is some checks and balances upon it. There are some checks and balances upon the Homeland Security Department. There are none. There are absolutely no checks and balances on the out-of-control viruses in the ACLU. So there it is. I need a tribute to Pavarotti again. Play La Donna Mobile for a minute, and I'll catch my breath, and we'll take the callers, and we'll do this, and we'll do that. Let's pause right here. Yesterday I read the English translation of that from the Italian. Not that I could translate it myself, but I read it. It was very interesting. Of course, it is extremely chauvinistic and sexist, which is why, of course, it was so popular the world over. And Pavarotti apparently sang beneath the radar screen of the current crop of revolutionaries who control virtually everything that we're allowed to hear. And saying, I'm surprised that this aria has not been burned. Wherever it is sung, when you think about it, woman is changeable and this and that. But we'll go on. It doesn't matter to me whether they burn this or they burn that. In the end, they'll all burn in hell, as far as I'm concerned. And there will be a day that we'll have our reckoning in this country. As sure as I am sitting here, as sure as there's a microphone in my hand, as sure as I'm sitting here on this radio show, there's going to be an event which crystallizes the nation. And these rats, these viruses will have their day. I'm telling you, they will finally see the justice from the people themselves. The people will seek the justice. They can only take so much for so long. And when push comes to shove and another big firecracker goes off, they will know it was the judges and the lawyers from NYU and Columbia and Bolt and Harvard and the other institutions of lower learning that did it to them. And they will be held to pay. I'm telling you, it's going to happen. It will happen. I know it will happen. And no government will be able to stop the people from seeking the vengeance that they finally should seek. And it will happen, as sure as I'm sitting here, because the government can't protect us from these rats, because by and large, the government's filled with them anyway. That's why they took a good man like Congressman Kurt Weldon. Remember him? You remember he came up with Abel Danger? Remember what they did to him? They sicked the FBI on him, and they ruined the man. They destroyed him. And drove him out of office. If you think that there are no political witch hunts being conducted in this country, you are wrong. It's both on the congressional level and on the local level. Here we have in San Francisco Supervisor Ed Ju. Ed Ju is being hounded by the FBI for something they allege he did, while lawyers connected to the Democrat establishment, the Attorney General's office connected to the Democrat establishment, permits a fundraiser to flee probably to China. And none of them are investigated. This is all a political witch hunt. In other words, they can sic any arm of the government they want upon any one of us at any time for no reason whatsoever and destroy us. That's the way it works. It's a disgraceful thing for me to have to tell you it's going on, but it is going on. And I understand that we're all frightened of these arms of government because they have unlimited money. Look what they're doing to our Marines with the fraudulent Haditha case. You have Marines who did exactly what they were trained to do after several of their own men were killed. And an entire case was created against them by the enemy himself in cahoots with Time magazine, in cahoots with Jack Murtha, the biggest porky pig in the history of the government. And consequently, you've got men facing life or death now with courts martial. And it came out today that the video footage of a high-flying satellite that watched the entire event as it unfolded in Haditha was severely edited by the government itself, who was trying to crucify the Marines in a so-called Haditha case. In other words, the spy satellite was flying over Haditha during the so-called massacre, and there were several hours of footage during which the firefight occurred. I think it was 2 hours long. And yet, the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, a branch of the federal government, in an attempt to crucify the Marines, released only a short version of the satellite footage in order to prove their point that a massacre did occur. And so when we have a government that is filled with corruption like this, that wants to crucify its own men in order to bring shame upon the war and shame upon the Republican Party, filled with red diaper dopa baby lawyers inside the NCIS, I am asking you how this kind of country can survive. A house divided cannot stand. A house divided cannot stand. This is not one party vying with another for the betterment of betterment of the nation. We all understand that there's give and take in politics. And we accept it. And we understand that there's a certain amount of corruption. Just as we understand department stores will permit a certain amount of pilfering or, shoplifting in order to let the shopper feel good and not to inspect everybody. They count it as a part of doing business. What is it? 2-3% of their costs are related to shoplifting. And they let it go on because in order to tighten down a little further, they'd make the shopper feel uncomfortable. In other words, if they inspected your bag every time you walked out of a department store, you'd feel uncomfortable and you'd be less likely to feel good and shop there again. So the shoplifters capitalize on this feel-good feeling and they shoplift and the business writes it off as an expense. And it's the same with the government. You've got to expect a certain amount of corruption. That's the price of living in a democracy. Of course, there's corruption in totalitarian regimes that's even worse, but we won't go into that. But the fact of the matter is when the corruption leads to a crippling, as it has right now, where the where both parties don't seem to be engaged in the people's business but in their own pork barrel business, then we the people have to fend for ourselves. Into this breach steps the virus of the ACLU, the virus of red diaper dopa baby judges, like the one who just, Judge Marrero, in my opinion, who just gutted the Patriot Act. And what happens is we are less safe today than we were yesterday. Do you understand that or not? And when we have a government that's so busy in rolling in pork that they no longer regulate foods and drugs in the way they should be regulating them, what we have are additives dumped on our children, which makes them hyperactive. Consequently, the children become crazier. And that is good for business, for the drug companies and for the AMA, the medical establishment itself. And they can then prescribe drugs and they can get kids coming in by the droves. And they get quack doctors who say that not enough children are being treated with the drugs and so forth and so on. And that's why there's so much work that can be done. You know, there are days that I don't want to really do radio anymore. I got to tell you right now, I've done 15 good years. And there are days I just say, you know, it's time possibly to hang up my spurs. I got to tell you right now that the greatest people in all fields usually leave before they have to leave. And I've been many, many soul-searching nights and days saying, why am I doing this? I don't need to do this. Why am I doing this? The children are grown up and they're doing well. I don't have to fend for myself anymore. I've proven everything I want to prove. I don't have to get up here every day for 3 hours and prove how smart I am. So why should I do this? Why shouldn't I just say that in X month coming up, it's going to be the last show I do and I disappear and no one ever hears from me again. That's the end of it. And I, whatever years God grants me or days or months, I just try to like get through it and enjoy it like every other guy on this planet, taking some pleasure here and there, enjoying some time here and there, and that's the end of it. Another man walked the earth, and whatever he did, he did. But then I think, how many men are there on the earth who are capable of gathering the elements of what's going on and succinctly describing them to millions of people every day, and showing you what's happening to you, showing you what's happening to your children, showing you the conspiracies involved, and showing you what you can do to empower yourself? The answer is not too many of us exist. And so that makes me get up, and that makes me dust myself off, and that makes me grind my guts one more day on the radio. And so here I am grinding my guts for the betterment of you and your children. And with God's will and your listenership, I shall grind them for one more hour today, and you shall be here.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, we are again celebrating the life of and the voice of Luciano Pavarotti, who died yesterday. And you don't have to be an opera fan to understand greatness, you know. I mean, this is great. So that's it. Then there are other great stories. The big ones are the Mr. Shu, the Clinton's chop suey connection, Mr. Shu, who fled back, they think, to China. But the big questions which are not being asked nor answered are, A, why did California's Attorney General's office reduce his bail from $2 million to $1 million last week? And B, why did his lawyer, Mr. Brosnahan, who represents Rat Boy, a well-known left-winger, not seize his passport? It seems to me they wanted him to flee the country so that he wouldn't have to answer questions and embarrass Hillary Clinton's campaign. But then, of course, I'm only a talk show host. I'm not running for office. I'm not an old glue horse part of the establishment. An actor glue horse who, of course, would never answer a real question. I'm simply a talk show host who asks questions that no one will answer. And that's why, of course, I'm not in politics. Because if you ask real questions that require real answers, you don't belong in politics. You belong in talk radio. At least talk radio as it exists now. Not as it will exist in a year or two when it changes completely into something that you would recognize as having occurred perhaps in the Soviet Union of the 1930s. And with that cheerful introduction, we'll go to the lead stories on MichaelSavage.com, which we've been talking about. One, red diaper doper baby ACLU judge killed part of the Patriot Act. Who elected this rat? Answer, George, Bill Clinton, 1999. He was not elected. He was appointed. And, of course, that way you can get away with anything you want. You can represent any nefarious interest you wish and answer to nobody and call it that light and enlightenment and liberalism and say that you're doing it for the will of the people. Topic two, Dr. Savage warned you about the dangers of food additives and your child's behavior 25 years ago. He has republished Healing Children Naturally, and he offers it to you again for your perusal and for your possible involvement. Because if you're a lazy parent, you shouldn't have had a child to begin with. But if you're the kind of parent who's simply giving your child any junk that the child demands, then you're a bad parent, and that's why your child is possibly hyperactive. They may be reacting to salicylates in the foods, or outright other food additives, or colorings, or flavorings, things that you wouldn't even give your dog or your cat. You are probably feeding your child in that muffin and that cup of cocoa or coffee that you're giving your child in the morning. If I can tell you how many apparently intelligent-looking mothers dump sugary pastries and a soda on their child before sending them off to school, it would be heartbreaking to tell you. I see it all the time. It seems to me that an entire generation of knowledge has been lost as a result of the forces of the media and, of course, outright laziness. Legendary Italian tenor Luciano dead, as I said. Al-Qaeda announces new Bin Laden video, ho-hum. That's about as interesting as yesterday's news. Canada says Muslim women don't need to remove the veil to vote. Then, of course, what does the vote mean in Canada anymore anyway? One cannabis joint led to a very talented girl's death in England. Her parents are heartbroken. They're professionals. I've been trying to warn you about the dangers of marijuana. But most of you Marin Countyites don't understand that the reason you are sick in the head is because you're mentally disturbed. And the reason you're mentally disturbed is because you were born that way and because you dope yourself up on a regular basis. The father said the following. He said, different people have different limits with drugs. For some, even the tiniest amount can be too much. According to the Royal College of Physicians, something not believed in by the people of Marin County. Recent studies have shown that cannabis use doubles the risk of developing schizophrenia. But then again, if you live in a county where 98% of the people are schizophrenic, they don't have to pay attention to the Royal College of Physicians. They only have to pay attention to a newspaper written by a red diaper doper baby himself, published by him. They then go on to say that adolescents are said to be particularly at risk, with those who start smoking dope at 15 years old four times more likely to develop a psychotic disorder by the age of 26. A spokesman for the Royal College said that a study of drug use in Denmark had also suggested the existence of cannabis psychosis. It is a short-lived disorder that seems to be brought on by cannabis use but subsides quickly once the individual has stopped using it. I don't agree with that. I see people in their 40s and 50s who are still psychotic as a result of having smoked dope for a long period of time. Anyway, the 22-year-old, who was a talented violinist, suffered a psychotic episode after smoking one joint of skunk, the strongest form of cannabis, and it led to a damaging course of drugs, depression, bullying, and finally suicide. The mother, Mrs. McKnight, said, "People think nothing of cannabis nowadays. They just don't realize this drug can tip you over the edge. A lot of people try it. With the government declassifying it, I think young people assume it is completely harmless, but it can destroy your mind." Of course, it has destroyed the minds of most of America's politicians, and that is why we are in the trouble we are in right now. With that introduction, I will turn it over to you, the people, at 1-800-449-8255. If you want to read the story, go to michaelsavage.com. I'm sure it will not appear in your local newspaper because the publishers and editors find it offensive to the pot smokers who they themselves know. WOR, New York City, Yehuda, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I'm a teacher. I had a student in my class who supposedly had ADHD. After a week of him extremely acting out, one morning I called him over after recess and asked him, "And I hope you don't mind if I ask you a personal question." So he said, "Sure." So I said, "What did he eat for breakfast?" So I said, "He drank cocoa." So I called up his parents and I said, "You know, what are you doing to your kid? You know, he's hyperactive to begin with. What are you giving him cocoa and sugar for?" Said, "Well, we don't give him." So after 2 weeks of this persisting, I called the parents again. I'm like, "Didn't I speak to you 2 weeks ago?" So they're like, "I swear to you, we didn't give him any cocoa." So I pulled over the kid and I said, "Where are you getting cocoa from?" Turns out he was sneaking into the kitchen in school, and for 2 weeks straight, for like that period of time, he was drinking cocoa every morning. And that just like totally set him off. And after I explained to him, you know, what it can do to him, he stopped and the symptoms really, I guess, quieted down. And after I read your book, the whole entire incident really inspired me that for research methods in college, I actually designed a design using no food additive, you know, compared to a group that did get food additives. And I, you know, did all the research on Feingold.
Amazing, so amazing. Yehuda, where do you teach?
I teach in a Hasidic school in Muncie.
Amazing. But you got your knowledge of the effect of sugar and additives on behavior from where? From my book?
I kind of had a hunch about it. And when your book came out, I published it right away, and I saw the whole entire thing about Feingold, so I did a lot of research on it online, being that, you know.
Well, you know, I got to tell you something. You're a pioneer in your community because if you look at the foods that the Orthodox Jewish people eat, it's overloaded with pastries. You know that. You've been at many of the events. It's overloaded with sugary pastries. It's overloaded with alcohol. It's overloaded with sodas. You know all of this.
I mean, I look at my nephews, and like unfortunately, like their mothers just like look for the, like they give them all that junk and they look for the quick fix and take them to.
And the parents are not that healthy. They're often in very bad shape at very early ages. They get diabetes and early onset diabetes at that. It is all related to sedentary lifestyles and diet. If you actually want to look at a biblically correct diet or a diet, let's say, based upon the Bible, it certainly wouldn't be the diet that your folks are eating right now. It would be closer to an Arabic Yemenite diet that they eat in Yemen right now, incidentally. The Yemenite diet of today, the traditional Yemenite diet in the tip of Saudi Arabia, is probably closer to the biblical Jewish diet than any other diet on earth. Do you know that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, just to tell you how high-ranking your book is at my house, it's actually on the shelf next to the copy of the Bible in my home. So.
Oh, God, don't do that to me. That's too hard. Well, I don't know what to say other than thank you so much for being a great teacher and saving children. Remember, he who saves a single life, it is as though he has saved the entire world. Here's your question. Who wrote that?
That's in the Talmud.
Well, Maimonides wrote that. He who saves a single life, it is as though he has saved the entire world. And that comes from the teaching of your own people. And that's so important, because if you save one student from the behavioral problems, which would drive him, no doubt, into some kind of medication, whether it be legal or illegal, and possibly throw him off the rails of life, perhaps that child could be the next Einstein, or the next Pavarotti Yehuda, or even just the next Yehuda, the next good teacher.
I would like also to thank you for being my only conservative professor in college, although you're not actually with me in the classroom, but it actually saves me from going berserk sometimes.
Well, thank you for being a great teacher. I was once a school teacher, and I know it's the most noble of all professions. Let me send you a copy of Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's. Maybe you'll use that with one of your older friends as well. Thank you for that blessed call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Every break we'll have a Pavarotti piece, because a light has gone out in the world, and I want you to understand you can still have that light, I guess, through a DVD, right? A CD you can go buy and listen to the greatness of his voice. I mean, they come along so rarely, you know? And who do we have to look forward to? I, God only know, there are a few good tenors left, but one of them is gone. And he was a superstar of The Voice. Let's go to the callers, Houston, Texas. Paul, KPRC in Houston, Texas. What's on your mind, please?
Savage, thanks for taking the call. Just curious, what is your advice for a guy in his 30s, you know, trying to live the straight life, you know, married with kids, having to deal with people that literally have no clue? I mean, when you're in this world today, you're basically dealing with people, you know, that are professionals, highly educated, and yet they know nothing. And there seems to be almost no place left for people that understand and care what's going on.
They don't know. No, you're right. Most of the people who consider themselves, enlightened, let's say they have a college education, they are brainwashed. They've been brainwashed all through the school years. They believe there's no real war against us, that the Islamofascists are not trying to take over the world. They've got everything exactly upside down. They believe that homosexuals are still oppressed in America. They don't realize there's also a homosexual agenda. I mean, I could go on with about 20 topics. They have no idea as to the reality of the threats to themselves and their family and their church and their school and their country itself and their very freedom. Paul, I look around America and I see people walking around with utter, totally carefree. And I say to myself, they haven't any idea that their freedom is precious and it can disappear. They haven't any idea that they could be enslaved. If not them, their children could wind up literally enslaved in their lifetime. They don't understand this. They don't understand that when they go in a dangerous neighborhood, they're at risk of getting killed. And so they often get hurt when they go into bad places. They think that if they give a liberal, ass-eating smile, that dangerous gangbanger is going to understand that they're not one of the evil Republicans and that they'll be spared somehow. I understand what you're saying. I know what liberalism is. It's a mental disorder, Paul. I don't have a cure for it. There aren't enough straitjackets in the world to cure this country.
I understand. Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. Just give you a couple quick examples. You know, I think that if a nuke went off in New York City, that people would be upset that the next NFL game isn't on.
You'd have a certain degree of apathy, that they wouldn't be able to go to a nightclub, or that their sports were interrupted, or their porno feed was broken on the internet. I understand that. But then they would come to the realization that something terrible has happened, but for the exact opposite reasons, they would say, we provoked it. That if we had only not tampered with the Muslim world, they wouldn't have done this to us. That's if they would believe the Muslims did it, that it wasn't Dick Cheney and Richard Nixon who came back from the crypt to do it. That's if they could actually go to the level of saying the Islamofascists did it. They'd say, we got what we deserve because we were tampering with them. The Iraq war did it. They have no idea of history. They don't understand anything about the history of the Islamofascist sweep across the ages. They don't understand history because they're ignoramuses who think they're enlightened.
So what advice to give? How to cope?
Oh, well, you mean, how do you deal with this?
Yeah.
I don't have an answer, Paul. I deal with it by getting on the radio and expressing my view of the world and my view of reality. And the confirmation comes from the size of the audience and callers like yourself. How do you reach the ignoramuses who think that they are enlightened? You can't. All you can do is live with it. And it's very painful, I got to tell you. How old are your kids?
4 and 2.
It's a rough age because they're going to be brainwashed by the very forces that you're describing. Isn't that right?
That's right. That's right. That's what I'm concerned about.
Well, you have to do it without getting angry. The kids will turn off from you. You have to explain that there are bad people in the world and that there are confused people in the world. And so you have to then tell them that sometimes people don't know what they're talking about and your teacher didn't know what he was saying and that it's not right for a man to marry a man. And you have to explain why, that it's not in nature. And you show them dogs or you show them ducks in a stream and you say, you see, there's a boy duck and a girl duck and there are baby ducks. And that's how nature or God set it up, that the boy duck lives with the girl duck and has baby ducks. And sometimes people are not as smart as the duck itself and they become mixed up. And they think that God intended boys to be with boys and girls to be with girls, but that's not the way it was intended. You have to explain it to them. Start with a simple thing like a duck in a pond. And ultimately, Paul, the only thing that can keep you from going totally crazy in this world is understanding that there are some rules that are eternal. They have never changed. They never will change. And that no matter how mad the society may become, no matter how loud their voices may be, and no matter how strong the forces try to scream at you that you're the wrong one, there are eternal laws that you can rely upon, and they can be found in the Rock of Ages, which is the Bible. Remember, that book has survived all these thousands of years for a reason, and that reason is because other times have been as tumultuous as this one, and people needed a rock to hold on to.
Savage.
Hey, Savage Nation, the leadership of this country is once again doing it to you, undermining our borders, language, and culture. How? They're letting Mexican trucks across our highways, no inspections. No inspections of the driver or the truck. Who's behind this? I spoke with Representative Duncan Hunter about the situation and what he's going to do to stop it. Listen.
Well, the Department of Transportation is pushing the United States in this trucking deal with Mexico, pushing us into a position of vulnerability in a security sense, because this allowing 100 companies to recruit all the trucks in Mexico which they desire and utilize them in now a seamless transportation across the American border, taking up big pieces of trucking routes from American trucking companies, will give us a major security exposure. We will have no understanding of the criminal records or the driving records of the people behind the wheels of those 18-wheelers. We will have a massive problem in terms of safety. And there aren't enough highway patrol officers in the United States to do all the checking that would be necessary to qualify them from a safety perspective. And you know something? The big drug dealers in Mexico will have their number one thugs behind the wheels of these trucks because now they won't have to stop and offload. And that means they're gonna want to have their thugs drive the drug trucks from their origin points in Mexico all the way to their destination points in the United States. So this opening to trucks from Mexico will be disastrous for the U.S. in a number of areas. You know something, I think the one area that Americans are probably most concerned about is all those great American trucking companies, all those family operations where people saved and scraped and came up with enough money to buy a good rig, and now they're going to be thrown aside because you're going to have cheap trucking coming from Mexico with inexpensive diesel fuel and with lax safety regulations and low labor costs. That's going to be bad for American truckers.
Where is this leading us?
Well, the trucking deal with Mexico is part of the NAFTA agreement that was voted through by Congress in 1994. And when I gave the closing speech against NAFTA on the Republican side, I predicted that this would be disastrous for the United States, and NAFTA, in fact, has been disastrous. But they had never implemented the trucking piece of NAFTA. This is the trucking piece of NAFTA that gives truckers from Mexico access to America's highways and can never give reciprocity to the extent that it will outweigh the detrimental effect of those trucks on the U.S. highways. And so this is something that's been over 10 years in the making. Now it's coming to fruition, and it's going to be bad news for Americans.
Oh, it's that bad?
Well, we put a number of pieces of legislation in, and one that would have effectively stopped the policy, and that was passed by the out of the Transportation Committee. And we also have, obviously, the defunding amendment that takes away any money to administer this program, which would also stop it. But those policies have not been passed through both houses of Congress and have not been obviously signed by the president, who wants to see the Mexican trucking deal go through. And as a result of that, this trucking deal is moving forward. The Teamsters made a court challenge to it, which I think was a good idea, but that challenge failed, and it looks like in the next several days, some of those 100 companies are going to start to access America's roads. And the interesting thing about this is there's only 100 companies that are given permission to access America's highways, but those 100 companies can literally recruit every truck in Mexico. So it doesn't mean it's limited to 100 trucks. It's limited to 100 companies, and that can be tens of thousands of trucks.
What kind of government is this?
Well, this is part of the law of the United States, because NAFTA was passed in 1994, and the Mexican trucking deal was part of the North American Free Trade Agreement, which was disastrous for this country. Now, it's going to produce safety problems. It's going to produce security problems because we don't have enough understanding and enough transparency of the driving records or the criminal records of the people that are going to be behind the wheels of those 18-wheelers. So this is going to produce more difficulty on America's highways. It's going to render our highways less safe. And it also means you're going to have lots more dangerous narcotics coming into this country, because the narcotics kingpins in Mexico and Central America, once again, will install their toughest thugs behind the wheels of those 18-wheelers and send them off loaded up with narcotics, bound for destinations in the United States. And we will have absolutely no understanding of the criminal records or the driving records of the people behind those wheels. So those people will be in part of that traffic. And so this deal is going to be disastrous for this country. And I would say this, as you know, I'm running for the presidency of the United States. As president, I will do everything I can to repeal or to remove the United States from this so-called NAFTA trucking deal.
This can't be happening.
Well, you know, I built the border fence in San Diego, and it works so well. And it's really two fences. It's a double fence, two fences with a Border Patrol road in between. And it reduces smuggling of people and drugs in the San Diego sector by more than 90%. As a result of that, I wrote the bill that extends it 854 miles across Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. And, you know, we've got $800 million in cash sitting at the Department of Homeland Security for purpose of building that fence. The president signed the fence bill mandating its construction, and yet the administration's only built 17 miles of that 854-mile border fence. And one thing I will do as president is build all 854 miles of the southern border fence in 6 months. That's my commitment.
This is hard to believe that this is still going on. It can't be going on. But thanks for the update.
Hey, Michael, thanks so much for letting me be on. And Michael, if folks want to see pictures of my border fence, they can go to my website at GoHunter08.com.
Every few hundred years,
Every few hundred years, nature produces a voice like this. And that's the beauty of it. The rest of us are sort of ordinary in so many ways, or in every way. And some of us have talents here or talents there. But when they're extraordinary talents like this, when they leave the earth, a darkness, you know, envelops a portion of the earth. It's true. And, you know, in this case, it's Pavarotti, the opera singer. You don't even have to like opera to understand how great he was. Just listening to his voice, he could reach virtually any human being with a modicum of an ear and a soul. But in every field, there are people of this magnitude, but we never hear of them. I don't mean all the time, but occasionally there are people in various fields who come along and we never hear of them. You look at the news today, for example. I'm on the Associated Press site, top headlines. Most of it is propaganda placed by public relations agents. For example, you won't believe these articles. Poll says Clinton and Giuliani least religious. It was put out by the so-called Pew Research Center, as you know, a Democrat socialist front group. And they're trying to slam Romney because he's a Mormon. Again, because he's religious, it's going to work against him. I don't believe a word these stinkers say. Here's another story. You're telling me this is top news? It's incomprehensible that a story like this would be a top headline in AP. What illness? Plachette's still a Spitfire. Now, why would they take an old, broken, unknown actress from the 1960s and put her up there because she was at some event for the Bob Newhart show, which appeared in 1978? What world are they living in? Answer, public relations and propaganda. And that passes for news, which is why the newspapers are going out of business. Not one of the top headlines says top Hillary Clinton fundraiser flees country. Greece is skidded by legal professionals. Not one article refers to what's going on in that case. Not one article refers to the poisons in the foods of our children. It's unbelievable to me how corrupt the media has become, which is why, you know, you say, well, Bush's ratings are low. They're like 28% popularity. The Congress has about a 14% popularity, which is the lowest in history since Nancy Pelosi took over. Has anyone done an analysis of the relative trust in the media? I would guess that it's lower than that of Congress. My guess is it has to be under 10% of the people have any faith at all in a newspaper today. You know? Portland, Oregon, Alan, KXL, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I made an observation, and the show was a repeat about a week ago. It went to commercial, and after coming back from commercial, I didn't get to hear your explanation because it changed topics. And the observation had to do between the relationship of the perspective of a child and the elderly. And I also wanted to let you know that that's right in line with Einstein's theory of special relativity, stating basically that time was relative.
You're a very brilliant man, but I have to ask you to repeat the question. You're asking me to tell you what I think about perceptions of reality, the difference of perceptions of reality of a child and an adult, or a child and an old person?
Well, you made an observation, and I've made the same observation, where I think you were sitting on your boat, and you said it kind of hit you that when you're a child, everything has the kind of a grand, bigger-than-life kind of feel to it. And then when you get maybe like I'm in my 30s, where everything becomes really mundane. And then
how a child sees the world. Well, I have a dog who has to substitute for a child. And so his perceptions are different than a child's. But, you know, you watch a dog react to things and you see to a dog, every sound is bigger than life. Okay. It's the same to a child. To a child, it's all brand new. So what can you imagine what a rainbow must look like to a child? And as we get older, rainbows still inspire most of us, but we're somewhat jaded. I think that's what you're referring to, that kind of gross interpretation.
It is, but you said the observation was you start to get some of that back. I mean, as
when?
Time goes on, you start to, you know, smell the roses.
Oh, you're saying that as you get older, some of it comes back? Yeah, well, maybe I was in one of those moods for a minute. Maybe I don't know why it hit me. You're saying that I said that I was feeling some of those things I felt as a child again?
Correct. I mean, that's what you were saying.
Could have been I had enough B3 that day. I don't really know. I don't have any explanation. It could have been the niacin.
But I mean, but that is right in line with Einstein's special theory of relativity, where he basically...
How so? What does he say?
He basically boils it down to where he's basically stating that time's relative. It's relative to the perspective of the person watching the train versus the person on the train. How time.
Well, there's another analogy which my friend, a physicist, repeated on radio last week, where he said the issue of monkeys on a typewriter. You know, monkeys are dancing on the keys of a typewriter and letters are typed, and people think that the monkeys are typing the letter. But in fact, they're just randomly dancing on the keys of a typewriter. Does that more or less fit?
No, I'm not really sure if that's really what I'm trying to convey, but...
Let's take the analogy of monkeys dancing on the keys of a typewriter. That would be the news people today, the journalists. That because they're typing letters that are somewhat literate, meaning that they're spelled correctly and they make sentences, they think that they're writing the news. But it has no relationship to what the news really is.
I do
agree. Or let's go back to Plato, where Plato said most of us don't see reality, we only see the shadows on the wall. Does that work for you?
That's closer. Like I said, it was just an explanation of an observation you made. I do remember being a child. I do remember every once in a while.
Oh, you're saying because I said that you were able to relate back to being a child yourself and remember what it was like to be a child. I think most of us occasionally, when we're super relaxed and we're really in a state of calm, we can sometimes look back and look for a moment the way we saw it. We can see the world as we did as a child. I think that's true. I don't know what to say on that. I think it does happen, you know, to people. I don't know. Sometimes I say things on the show and I can't remember saying them and I can't recall what I said. You know, you talk about 15 years of conversation. I wish I could have that kind of recall. I don't. I'm very lucky, though, we have good archives, the crew for my show. Phil and Beowulf, I mean, they're really great guys, and they can almost access anything immediately. If I say, do you remember when, blah, 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 they can hit. It's not yet that well, you know, organized, but they know it by now. They know me very, very well. I have to thank them for that. Guys, do you know what he's referring to? I wish you could find it for me for tomorrow. Ottawa, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yeah, I'm calling to support your debunking global warming piece that you have on your homepage. I've worked with hundreds of climate scientists for the last 10 years. In many countries, and quite frankly, there is no consensus about the causes of climate change. A lot of the stuff that we hear, unfortunately, in the press tells us that there's this consensus, and so many of the scientists are actually very reluctant to speak out. But, you know, what you're doing and what others are doing are hopefully creating a climate where more scientists can actually say what they're really finding.
Yes, it's a little site on michaelsavage.com, which is called Debunking Global Warming, and the headline says, less than half of published scientists endorse global warming theory. That doesn't stop charlatans like Al Gore from saying all scientists, virtually all scientists agree. It doesn't stop politicians like Jerry Brown, the attorney general of the state of California, going on NPR 2 weeks ago and infuriating me by saying all scientists agree that global warming is real and it's caused by man, and we now have to constrain industry in the hands of government. And they don't permit anyone on NPR to get up there and say, now, wait a minute. Less than half of published scientists endorse global warming theory. It's amazing, the big lie. But then, as Goebbels said, when you tell a big lie often enough, it becomes the truth. Right now, the liberals are telling the big lie, and they've turned it into a half-truth, which they take as the whole truth.
And I'm saying to media that frequently bring this up, I'm saying, prove it. Show us that there is a consensus in the climate science community. And they can't do it because there is no worldwide poll, and the IPCC only represents a very small fraction of the world's scientists. So,
right.
In fact,
I got to tell you this, one of the best, you could take the average person who doesn't know science, and if you go on to Greenland Ice Yields Hope on Climate, to me, that was one of the most important recent discoveries, yet it's never been broadcast by the media. It was an international team of scientists, multinational team of scientists. They worked for years. You know the one. They bored 1.2 miles into the Greenland ice shelf. They pulled up the remnants, the DNA of plants and animals that lived eons ago. And guess what they discovered? The Earth was warmer eons ago than it is today. How can they then say that it's we causing this uptick in global warming? There may be an uptick in global warming, but it's not we who are doing it. That is not to argue that I like pollution. I hate pollution. I'm a boater. I'm a hiker. I'm an outdoorsman. I despise people who poison the airs, waters, and places. But I also despise liars who try to to gain control of every aspect of industry around the Western world under the guise of global warming in order to simply induce a soft market Marxism. Thanks for the call. Well put, Michael. Bravo. Ha. So what do we got now? We got a little time left here on the show. Do we have? Give me a Pavarotti for a minute while I get my breath for my concluding aria. If there is a voice coach in the San Francisco Bay Area who is A, conservative, and B, a Michael Savage fan, and C, truly professional, and think that you would like to teach me how to sing amateur opera, please contact me through the boys on the other end of the line. Because I think I'm going to entertain myself by becoming a bad singer. How would you like to be great for 1 minute in your entire life? Can you imagine what it would be like to be able to be, let's say, Barry Bonds hitting that ball, if that's the world you relate to, or an F-18 Hornet pilot who has shot, well, let's go back to Vietnam where there were air wars, a man who shot down two MiGs in one engagement, or it was actually two at once. I'm still watching that dogfight series. Can you imagine what it must feel like to be the man who knocked out a heavyweight champion? Can you imagine what it feels? Just go down the list. That's what we're talking about, those surging moments where you're more than mortal. Well, that's what keeps us going, I suppose, and that's why we live through others who can do those things. And on that great note, just remember that you can always listen to these great men forever, thanks to modern technology. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return. Savage.